Hello, officer. Is there something wrong?
Mrs. Morgan, you haven't seen your husband lately, have you?
Kirk and I went to visit him down at the prison yesterday.
How about here?
Here?
Has he been home?
No, I just said he's in prison.
I'd like your permission to have a look around the house for possible evidence that Miles has been here within the past 24 hours.
But he's in prison.
Mrs. Morgan, Miles Morgan is missing.
No, he's changed. The new Miles wouldn't do that.
Why has Miles Morgan escaped? What's he up to? To find out, join the adventure in Jonathan Park and the King Who Helped the Habiru. Meanwhile, part of the Creation Response Team is meeting in an office in Jerusalem, where they're gathered around a newly discovered copper scroll.
So, Dr. Dawson, how'd you have our scroll cut so quickly?
Jonathan, when they found the original copper scroll, it was very fragile and delicate. They couldn't just unroll it because it would have been destroyed.
They started by cleaning off the years of oxidation. Then they x-rayed it to determine where they needed to make the cuts so they wouldn't destroy the text inside. Then they used a saw, similar to what a jeweler would use, to cut it into 23 sections.
And then it was photographed and preserved.
Well, Ian, it's amazing you got all of that done so quickly on our scroll.
And so for now, we have these replicas and photographs that we can use for translation purposes, while the real one is stored safely away.
It was an expensive process.
And we need to ask those who believe in our cause to get behind our work financially.
What do you think we'll find?
Jim, I think it may solve many mysteries. Why was the original copper scroll so poorly written? Why are there, what appears to be, random Greek letters inserted into the Hebrew? Why are the amounts of the treasure so massive that it seems ridiculous?
Really?
At first glance, the two scrolls start off the same, except for one major difference. The sizes of the treasures are completely different.
Why would that be?
I don't know. But for now, I need to do more translation.
Well, gang, while Ian works on the translation, what do you say if we go do some sightseeing?
Sounds great.
Oh, absolutely.
Sounds awesome.
Gamaliel, have they taken our threat seriously, or do they continue to pursue the treasure of the copper scroll?
Yes, Shimon. They still press forward.
They have been fairly warned. Gamaliel, it's time to become more aggressive in showing these Gentiles that the temple treasure does not belong to them. Follow them wherever they go.
Yes, sir.
Jonathan, Kendall, to what do I owe the pleasure?
Well, the rest of the team was headed out for a tour of Galilee, but we thought we'd stop by and see how you're doing.
I've studied the copper scroll my whole life, but I've learned more over the past 2 days than ever before.
Like what?
Well, as you know, the question that's been nagging me is, why are the amounts of treasure listed so different in each of the two scrolls?
And you found the answer?
Jonathan, the first scroll lists over 25 tons of gold and 65 tons of silver.
How could that be?
No wonder it makes people doubt the scroll.
Look right here at this transcript of the original scroll. The units of treasure are written in a long form, an uncharacteristic way of writing them out. These units have traditionally been translated as talents, the expected Hebrew measurement of that time.
But you think different?
Watch what happens when I change the units in the first scroll from talents to kites.
Kites?
Yes, kite. It's an Egyptian measurement that's no longer used today, but was equivalent to around 9 grams. Let's see how it compares to the second scroll.
Wow, they match!
Not only that, but now the treasure shrinks to something much more realistic.
Ian, why would a Hebrew scroll have Egyptian units?
I'm not sure, but I started wondering if there was other evidence for an Egyptian influence.
What'd you find?
The Hebrew on the original scroll isn't quite like anything we've seen before, and there appears to be spelling errors. It's as if it were a non-Hebrew speaker that inscribed the scroll.
Like an Egyptian.
Jonathan, I need to investigate further. But now it's starting to make sense that the ochre on the wall at the Qumran cave was Egyptian. Well, now, if you'll excuse me, I will need to continue translating. Please, feel free to explore.
Wow. Hasn't it been relaxing to spend the evening out here in Caesarea?
Dad, it's been beautiful. The ocean to our left and the Roman Theater towering above us.
Yeah, not a bad way to spend time while we're waiting for Ian to figure out our next step.
And it gave Mr. Brennan and Jesse time to do some sightseeing of their own. So, Dad, Caesarea is mentioned several times throughout the Bible.
Well, yes. Paul was here. Peter visited the centurion here. Herod Agrippa died here. And Philip came here on a missionary trip. It was also the home of Pontius Pilate.
I remember hearing that.
Yeah, and they found evidence of all of that right here at the theater.
Which was built by Herod?
Well, yes. It was built between 22 to 9 years before Christ. Anyway, about 1961, the Italian archaeologist, Dr. Antonio Frova, discovered a block used in the stairway of the theater. It read, Pontius Pilate, prefect of Judea, made and dedicated the Tiberium to the divine Augustus.
Wow. Another archaeological reference to someone in the Bible.
Hello, Dr. Park.
Kendall, it's Ian.
Oh, hello, sir. How are things?
Where are you? I just had another amazing breakthrough.
We're in Caesarea.
Can you start heading back right away?
Sure. Son, let's start walking back.
Sure. What's happening?
The Greek letters. I think I figured it out.
Really? How?
He found something new?
Kendall, I kept running the letters backwards and forwards, trying to link them to different locations for the treasure. But then I stumbled across something. The first 10 Greek letters in the scroll spell out the name of Akhenaten.
Akhenaten?
The Egyptian pharaoh?
Exactly. Akhenaten is known to have built a whole new city to be his capital, now known as Amarna.
I don't get the connection.
Well, the river that flows from the Nile near Amarna is Bahar Yosef.
Joseph's River.
Exactly. Possibly named after Joseph, the Hebrew of the Bible. Now think of all the other Egyptian influences on the fathers of our faith. Moses, Aaron, Miriam, Joshua, Jeremiah, Baruch, Jesus himself, and Mary and Joseph, they all lived for periods of time in Egypt.
Are you suggesting an Egyptian origin for the Copper Scroll?
Well, I'm not sure.
But I thought the treasures were from priests who hid the treasures from the Second Jerusalem Temple before the Roman conquest in AD 70. How's Egypt figure into that?
There's an amateur historian by the name of Robert Feather who believes the treasures are actually from the Temple of Aten in Amarna. I in no way accept this, but I can't deny there seems to be some strange connection between Amarna and the scroll.
Wow. So what do we do now?
We may just be off to London.
London?
England?
I'll explain when you get here.
Hello, Union Air. Can I book a flight for you?
Hi. I actually need to change a flight.
No problem.
I was leaving tomorrow for Israel, but now I need to redirect to London.
Well, sir, you certainly are hopping around the globe.
Actually, I'm just trying to track someone down.
Oh, okay. Sir, give me the date and time that you'd like to leave, and I'll do my best to set up your new reservations.
Wow, Dr. Dawson. This hotel is beautiful.
It's one of my favorites in all of London.
I guess we're starting to have a little more funding.
So what's our plan?
Well, I want everyone to check in, and then we're headed to the British Museum to examine the Amarna tablets.
Amarna tablets?
Jesse, hundreds of tablets were found in Amarna, Egypt. Many were letters written from kings of different countries to the pharaohs Amenophis III and Akhenaten.
So we want to see if they might uncover an Egyptian origin to the Copper Scroll?
Exactly.
Are we all going?
Why do you ask?
Because I think Jesse and I would like more time to explore the museum to gather more information for my debate.
That's perfect. They would appreciate fewer people in the tablet room while looking at the artifacts. Okay, let's go.
All right, Dr. Dawson. This is the Middle East study room.
Wow, impressive. Wow.
Look at all the shelves full of tablets and artifacts.
Dr. Dawson, I'm sure you remember the rules, even though it's been a number of years since you've been here. Please wash your hands because the oil could damage the tablets. You'll be given a soft mat to place under the tablets. And remember that any cleaning or repairs to the tablets are to be done only by our conservators.
Ah, yes. Same as it's always been.
So we'll be able to investigate any of these tablets right there at those long tables?
That's right. All right, let's head this direction, and I'll introduce you to our duty curator, and she'll assist you in acquiring the tablets of your choice.
How incredible to be sitting here in the tablet room with the second copper scroll on the left and one of the Amarna tablets on the right.
I'm amazed they so easily let us have access to them.
I think it's because there aren't many scholars that can read this kind of cuneiform. We'll share our research with them. So, Akiva, you were uncharacteristically silent when Dr. Ruckman was showing us around.
Oh, you noticed that, huh?
You were hanging back a little.
I know Dr. Ruckman, but I was hoping he didn't recognize me.
Uh-huh.
Really? Why?
Well, back in November of 2008, I was meeting someone late at night to sell an artifact. We chose to meet at a Byzantine church just to the east of Bet Shemesh. When I got there, I caught a group of vandals defacing one of the mosaics. I yelled out and they got away before I could do anything.
Okay, what in the world does that have to do with Dr. Rockman?
About a month later, Dr. Rockman and some colleagues took a trip to Israel, and I was their guide. In the middle of my tour, the Israeli antiquities authorities showed up and took me away for questioning since I was the only witness. I could tell by the look on Dr. Rockman's face that he had understood just enough of the conversation to think that I had been the one to deface the mosaic.
No wonder you were avoiding him.
So this is an Amarna tablet?
Yes, and they found almost 400 of them. Many are letters written from the kings in the Levant to the Pharaoh of Egypt.
What's the Levant?
Well, Jonathan, it's the territory bordering the eastern Mediterranean Sea, all the way from Egypt up to Turkey.
And a large part of that area during the writing of these letters included the land of Canaan. Now, many of these Amarna letters were written by kings who were being attacked by the Habiru. They were writing to Pharaoh Akhenaten, asking for help.
So, Dr. Dawson, I've noticed that ever since we sat down, you've been studying the replica of our second copper scroll instead of the Amarna tablet in front of you.
Yes, yes. I think I've made an amazing observation in our scroll.
What?
These characters right here. See them?
I see them, but I can't read them.
It says something like, the king who allied with the Habiru.
The Habiru?
What's that?
Well, let's switch back to the Amarna tablet. This is tablet EA-286. The EA stands for El Amarna. This is a letter from Abdeheba, ruler of Jerusalem, writing to the Pharaoh. Here is line 56. The Habiru have plundered all the king's lands. So in this letter, Abdeheba is asking Pharaoh for help against the attacks of the Habiru.
Who are the Habiru?
One thing most scholars agree on is that the term Habiru is now clearly understood to mean individuals outside the city-state system, many times marauders and plunderers. It's entirely possible that the references in the Amarna tablets to Habiru in Canaan could be to the Israelites.
So, back to the clue from the second copper scroll. What's it saying?
The treasure is found in the city of the king who allied with the Habiru.
What city it's referring to? And who's the king?
I'm not sure. But somehow I feel the answer is somewhere here, in one of these tablets. That's our mission, to find out.
But you said there were hundreds of tablets.
And the whole collection isn't here in London.
And that does present a sizable challenge.
That's him right over there.
Dr. Dawson, I need to speak with you right away.
Micah, Dr. Ruckman, what's the matter?
Where'd you get here, Micah?
This man flew here all the way from Israel just to tell me about you.
What seems to be the problem here, Dr. Ruckman?
Ian Dawson. Micah's explained that you're just a treasure seeker, after fame and fortune.
But that's not...
I'm sorry, but I'm going to ask you and your team to leave the tablet room right now.
So then he just asked you to leave?
Well, yes. It appears that Micah flew all the way out of here just to stop us from checking out the Amarna tablets.
That's terrible.
So now what do we do?
Somehow, we need to determine the city of the king who helped the Habiru. But that information is on an artifact tablet locked up in the tablet room.
What are you doing, Jonathan?
I was just looking at this large hexagonal tablet. The Taylor Prism, right here in this case.
What's it about?
It's the account of some of the battles by King Sennacherib of Assyria during the reign of Hezekiah over Judah. Someone have 2 Kings, 18:13 and 15 on their phone?
Verse 13. Now in the 14th year of King Hezekiah did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, come up against all the fenced cities of Judah, and he took them. And then verse 15... And Hezekiah gave him all the silver that was found in the house of the Lord and in the treasures of the king's house.
Now listen to part of the translation from this prism. As for Hezekiah, the terrifying splendor of my majesty overcame him. And further down it says, in addition to the 30 talents of gold and 800 talents of silver and gems, antimony, jewels, large carnelians, ivory inlaid couches, ivory inlaid chairs, elephant hides, elephant tusks, ebony, boxwood, all kinds of valuable treasures, as well as his daughters, his harem, his male and female musicians, which he had brought after me to Nineveh, my royal city.
King Sennacherib laid siege against Jerusalem, surrounding the city.
Jim, verse 35 and 36.
And it came to pass that night that the angel of the Lord went out and smote in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. And when they arose early in the morning, behold, they were all dead corpses. So Sennacherib, king of Assyria, departed and went and returned and dwelt at Nineveh.
And that's what happened.
So Sennacherib never took Jerusalem.
Here, like the Taylor Prism talks about how Sennacherib surrounded Jerusalem but never talks of his victory. Unless, of course, it never happened.
On the floor below us in room 10B of this museum are giant wall reliefs that were taken from Sennacherib's palace at Nineveh. These giant murals depicted the greatest victories and conquests.
Out of all of the king's murals, Jerusalem would have been the greatest victory of all. But no such mural exists. Why?
Well, the Bible tells us why. God defeated his army.
So what was the end of Sennacherib?
Again, the Bible and archaeology agree. Right here in this museum is Babylonian Chronicle 1. One phrase from this artifact reads, "On the 20th day of the month, Ta'avat, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, his son slew him in rebellion. Esarhaddon, his son, sat on the throne of Assyria."
Now, Jim, would you read verse 37 from the Bible?
Sure. "And it came to pass, as he was worshipping in the house of Nisroch, his god, that Adrammelech and Sharezer, his sons, smote him with the sword, and they escaped into the land of Armenia, and Esarhaddon, his son, reigned in his stead."
So this Taylor Prism, the Lachish wall reliefs, Babylonian Chronicle 1 tablet, 2 Kings 19, and Isaiah 36 are all in harmony.
Okay, Ian, what about our hunt for the king who helped the Habiru? What are we going to do?
I need to get into Dr. Ruckman's office and regain access to the tablet room.
Ian, I think I'm going to keep my face away from him, if you don't mind.
Okay, why don't the rest of you take a break? I'll call you when we're back on the trail, and for now, I'm going to find Micah. Aha, I found you.
Ian, how'd you know I was here?
Remember when we'd come to London together? You'd love to feed the birds here in this park, so I took a chance you'd be here.
You want a seat on the bench?
Micah, after years of being allowed in the tablet room, suddenly I'm being treated like some sort of criminal.
All I told them was the truth.
You're not doing scholarly work.
Micah, is that what you really think of me? A hack?
Ian, back when we used to work together, I thought the most of your work.
And you find me different now?
Back then, you seemed like you were a purist. But then life got rough, I understand. You vanished for a decade and a half, but now it's like you're some movie star trying to make a comeback.
Oh, come on, Micah.
You're rushing from site to site, leaving a wake of chaos behind you. Accountable to no one.
Accountable to no one? Well, Micah, why don't you join me?
The Copper Scroll is too important to be handled in this way.
Micah, are you threatening me?
I'm saying I'll do whatever it takes to stop you.
It's kind of fun to have a little free time to look around the other displays.
I'm glad we're here together. Hey, Jesse, there was a drinking fountain in the next room over. You thirsty?
I'm fine.
Okay, I'll be right back.
All right, Dad.
Maxwell, how nice to see you.
Dr. Maxwell!
Let me know if there is any way our museum staff can assist you.
I sure will.
Oh, excuse me, miss. I didn't mean to bump into you.
No problem.
Hey, don't I recognize you from somewhere?
Maybe.
Maybe from the restaurant last night. No? I'm sure we've met, but I just can't place it.
Hey, Jesse, I just saw a real interesting... Dr. Maxwell?
Jesse and Jim Brennan, the creationists from Santa Fe.
Dr. Maxwell, fancy meeting you here.
No kidding. If I were you, I would almost call this impromptu meeting divine.
Yes, and if I were you, I guess I would call it yet another amazing random chance coincidence. Actually, we're here on a research trip.
Dr. Maxwell, while we've been on this trip, we've seen over and over again how archaeology is in harmony with the Bible.
Jesse, it does appear that many authors of the Bible relied on real historic events. But who were these authors?
The Bible tells us who the authors were.
Oh, really? Scholars have made a great case to show that the first five books of the Bible were not written by Moses. There are at least four styles of writing and literary style, and different names for God. They are divided into the following four: J for the author who used Jehovah, E for the author who used Elohim, D for the author of Deuteronomy, and P for the priestly author of Leviticus.
I would debate that.
Hey, that's a great idea. Dr. Maxwell, let's make that an official topic at the debate.
The game is on then. Be seeing you.
So, tell me again why I should trust you and your team in the tablet room.
Dr. Rockman, I want to remind you that Dr. Dawson is one of the few who can read Akkadian cuneiform, and we intend to share all our findings with the museum.
Hmm, that is valuable. However, Dr. Richard says you're cutting corners, doing bad archaeology, because you're blindly pursuing this treasure at any cost.
Dr. Ruckman, archaeologists have been looking for the treasure of the Copper Scroll for more than 50 years. But what if I'm on the right track? Please, let me back into the tablet room.
By the way, Akiva, you seem familiar. Have we met before?
Do you think we've met?
With that hat and sunglasses, I must admit it's a little hard to place your face.
So, Dr. Ruckman, what's your decision?
All right, you've got it.
Great.
You can start in the morning.
Excellent.
But know that I'm going to have the duty curators keep an eye on your every move.
Of course, of course. Thank you, sir. You won't regret this.
Hello, Miles Morgan.
What's happening?
Well, they've gotten access back to the study room, and they seem to be investigating the Amarna EA-286 tablet. So I'm planning to sneak back into the study room late tonight and find it for myself.
Well, Jonathan, this is amazing. I've read all about it. This is one of the Babylonian Chronicles.
What are the Babylonian Chronicles?
Well, Jonathan, the Babylonian Chronicles are a series of tablets that record Babylonian history from about 750 BC to about 250 BC.
Like what?
Well, look at this one right here. It tells the story of Nebuchadnezzar II defeating Pharaoh Necho in Carchemish. We also read about that in 2 Chronicles 35:20.
Wow. That's really amazing.
All right, Jonathan, here's a partial translation from this tablet. In the seventh month, in the month Kislev, the king of Babylon assembled his army. After he had invaded the land of Hatti, which is Syria-Palestine, he laid siege to the city of Judah. On the second day of the month of Adara, he conquered the city and took the king, which would be Jehoiakim, prisoner. He installed in his place a king, which would have been Zedekiah, of his own choice. And after he had received rich tribute, he sent forth to Babylon.
That's the same story as 2 Kings 24:7 through 17.
And Jonathan, this is just one of the Babylonian chronicles. There are many others. The Sumerian king list and the royal chronicle of Lagash mention a great flood. The prayer of Nabonius, found at Ur, it agrees that Belshazzar was a ruler in Babylon. The Nabopolassar Chronicle tells of the fall of Nineveh as predicted by the biblical prophet Nahum. In Sennacherib's annals is a record of a campaign against the Babylonian king Merodach-Baladan, who's also mentioned in Isaiah 39:1.
Kendall? Kendall? You there?
Right here, Jim.
Hey, Jesse and I are here with Ian and Akiva. We're allowed back in the tablet room. They want you to meet us there in 5 minutes.
Yes, sir. See you there in a few minutes.
Dr. Dawson, are you about to find the Copper Scroll treasure?
I definitely think we're getting closer. We've been blessed to come across some very important clues.
Why have you come to
Hey, what's going on?
We were just waiting for you guys. And all of a sudden, someone from the press just started asking Dr. Dawson some questions.
Oh, wow.
Then it erupted into this spontaneous press conference.
Excuse me, it's Jesse, right?
Me?
Yes. As a young woman, you're probably pretty excited that the world's following this story, aren't you?
Well, I hope they see that the real treasure is finding that archaeology tells many of the same stories as the Bible.
All right, all right. I know there's a lot of excitement over the Copper Scroll treasure, and the museum is in full support of it all. But now I need to disperse this crowd. Thank you all for being here.
And we need to get into the tablet room.
Follow me.
You requested the Amarna EA-286 tablet, the Abdi Hiba letter, right?
That's right.
It's gone.
Missing?
Yes, it's been stolen.
What?
No!
What? Come on, everyone. Let's...
Actually, I want you all to stay right here while I make a call.
What? Why? You don't think we had anything to do with it, do you?
Seems a little too coincidental that it's the very tablet you need. Dr. Ruckman said to watch you with a suspicious eye. Now stay here until I get him.
What happened to the Amarna tablet? Who took it? To find out, you'll have to join us next time for part two of Jonathan Park and the King Who Helped the Habiru. You've been listening to The Adventures of Jonathan Park. Although the story is fictitious, many of our adventures are based on real places, historical events, or scientific discoveries. To learn more about Jonathan Park and evidence for creation, please visit our website at jonathanpark.com. You'll also find additional resources that will help you see and understand how science is in complete agreement with God's Word. That's jonathanpark.com. Make sure to join us next time as the team searches to find the city mentioned in the Amarna tablets in part two of Jonathan Park and the King Who Helped the Habiru.
Until next time, this is Dr. Kendall Park reminding you, this is our Father's world. God created it. We can explore it. So live the adventure.